I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Glen Mills Schools in Delaware County outside of Philadelphia was founded in 1826 and has been called the Harvard of Reform Schools. It's a residential facility for court-ordered boys, and its campus looks like a prestigious small college or even a boarding school. Lisa Gartner, investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, found, quote, serious violence has been an everyday occurrence and open secret at the school. Her scathing investigation into Glen Mills, beaten then silenced, is a disturbing read. Counselors beating students for minor infractions, threatening students and counselors who wanted to go to the authorities, and an administration that either looked the other way or approved the use of abuse. The report has had an impact. Philadelphia has removed students sent to Glen Mills, and other states are following suit. The Pennsylvania Auditor General and the Delaware County District Attorney are investigating. Glen Mills leadership has both denied any wrongdoing and established a panel to look into the investigations, or into the allegations, I should say. We asked Lisa Gartner to join us, and as I said, she's investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Lisa, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. The Education Law Center also investigated Glen Mills and other residential child welfare facilities for their report, Unsafe and Uneducated, came out in December 2018. Maura McInerney is legal director of the Education Law Center, also joins us on Radio Times. Maura, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Philadelphia's Department of Human Services has been sending boys to the school for years at a cost of something like $52,000 a year. But after this Philadelphia Inquirer investigation, that practice has stopped. In fact, DHS has been transferring students from Philadelphia at Glen Mills to other facilities. And joining us is Cynthia Figueroa. She's the Philadelphia DHS Commissioner. Cynthia, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
We asked a representative of Glen Mills to join us. They were unable to do that. They did send us a statement, which I will be reading during the hour. Lisa, let me begin with you. What got you to write this story? And I ask that you begin with a mom who's visiting her son at Glen Mills. Notice that something was wrong. This was 2017. Is that what got you investigating this story?
No, actually. I started at the Inquirer in the summer of 2018. I'm relatively new around here. And coming to Philadelphia from Florida, where I'd been working also on investigations, I just sat down and started getting coffee and talking to a lot of activists, politicians, community members about what they thought were the issues that needed to be covered. And in talking with people who worked in juvenile justice, I'd never actually planned on doing stories on Glen Mills, but someone let slip that Philadelphia had suspended intake, had temporarily stopped sending boys to Glen Mills. I was surprised because everything I had heard was that Glen Mills was, you know, the best, you know, that a boy could hope for if he got sentenced by the court to a juvenile placement. So I figured something serious must have happened. So I started looking into that and uncovered an incident that had happened where a teenage boy from Philadelphia had been choked and beaten and punched by two counselors at the Glen Mills schools for little more than mouthing off. So I wrote that story. Glen Mills responded and said, you know, this is an isolated incident that we immediately self-reported. And so, you know, I obviously included their statement in the story about what had happened. But immediately after the story ran, I started getting emails and phone calls from former students and counselors saying there was nothing isolated about this. This happened before, it happened after, it's still happening. And as far as self-reported, often the school goes to lengths to make sure these reports don't get out. So that was the onus.
Well, let me go to you, Cynthia Figueroa. I mean, how long has your department been looking at Glen Mills?
So as referenced, there was a particular incident that happened in July. We had been working with them, and I was familiar with the provider. I was not familiar with the torrid history, I think, that has come to light. We had the horrible incident that Lisa described in July and immediately decided to close intake in order to really do a deeper dive in terms of what was going on at that campus, and had kept intake closed through the process of removing all the youth from that facility.
So that was really in the summer of 2018, so last year.
Correct,
basically.
Yes. Yeah.
And since that time, Philadelphia has not sent students there?
No, that's correct.
And all the Philadelphia students are now out as a result of this investigation?
So as of March 8th, all youth left. So there was a decline from the time of July through and then post Lisa's investigation.
And you did not send students after July because you didn't believe that Glenn Mills was doing their job?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the impact of the incident was egregious. It was incredibly concerning, and we got involved right away because we knew we had a number of youth. Another thing that we did because we were concerned is we had, at the time that we closed intake, we had 143 youth there. Right. And we wanted to ensure the safety of the youth that were remaining there. So we actually had a physical presence. We had staff on site really through up until the time we didn't have any youth physically there any longer. There are a lot of steps that we had attempted to take to try to figure out how we could best address the issues at Glenn Mills. Unfortunately, clearly not the kind of facility that we wanted to use at the time.
And I'll pick up on that more. Let me get you in on the conversation. And I read your unsafe and uneducated. You looked at a number of residential facilities, including Glenn Mills. And it seems in many ways this should not be news. I mean, people know about problems at Glenn Mills for a while.
Yes, it has a torrid history for many, many years of maltreatment against children. Between December 2013 and January 2017, there was an incident of child maltreatment by staff every other month. These incidents that were publicly reported, so it doesn't include incidents that were never reported, included corporal punishment, a staff member smashing a child into a countertop, pushing them against a fire extinguisher, grabbing them and shoving them through a chair, horrific incidents of abuse, reflective of a traumatic environment that these children were in, with much intimidation surrounding them. And in 2013, they actually refused to allow either the state police or state DHS to go into the facility.
Literally inside the buildings or to talk to students or even counselors there?
Correct. So there's a history of cover-up as well that is very much entrenched in that particular system. And we see the violations handled in a way that never resulted in revoking a license, provisional license, anything. It was simply corrective action and back to business.
Lisa, describe, if you could, what the sort of culture or environment at Glenn Mills has been, especially when counselors and certainly students have been afraid to explain what they have observed or what has happened to them.
Sure. Some of the former staffers I spoke with described almost like a mob mentality or a secret society, where if you're standing up for students instead of your fellow counselors, then you're on the outs. Students knew that if their fellow counselors witnessed a counselor attacking them, they'd be more likely to join in or help, you know, hide it than to report the fellow counselor. The grievance process codified in the Glenn Mills student handbook makes it next to impossible for a student's complaint to reach anyone outside of the school.
Just the way it's written?
Right. I mean,
out?
You have to, there's a chain of command that's very, you know, it's made into a system where you have to tell a peer, and then the peer can tell the person above them, and then the counselor can tell the senior counselor. And you have to get through something like six people before you can talk to your PO. Parole officer, yes. And, I mean, we spoke to many staff who said they were fired or said they were demoted simply for reporting abuse or trying to tell their superior about abuse at the school.
You even describe, I don't know if it's still true today, but the counselors being hired, many of them bodybuilders. I mean, they looked like big guys who use their muscle to try to control these children.
Sure, and this has been an open bragging point for the school in past years. Not really anymore, but it used to be. I mean, you can read the clips going back. It's, you know, there's like a quote about how, well, if we spent our money on social workers, they would tell a kid his teeth looked bad. But, you know, we just spend that money to fire the social worker and fix the kid's teeth.
But I mean, this is a facility that it is both privately run nonprofit, but it gets money from, I'm assuming, the city, the state, and others. How can it be? How I guess for so many years could it be a place where people knew, but no one told. Don't we have laws about that if children are being abused?
Well, I think, there's a lot of questions to ask about how do we create environments. And certainly we've done a lot of discussions internally because we're one county. So one of the things that we knew is that the facility was not just used by Philadelphia County, but multiple counties in the Commonwealth as well as multiple states. And I think because of the history that or the institution that folks believed it was. And so our work in terms of the state. So 2 points, I think, in terms of how do we create environments where we interview youth and they feel psychologically safe enough to tell what is really going on? Because we were on site quite a bit and would talk mm-hmm. to the youth, and they weren't in a position to necessarily share at the level of detail that they did otherwise in the investigative reporting. We've talked a lot about how do we include some opportunities to talk to youth post-discharge, and we've done that now more often when we believe there's a concern that has come up, and this is a great example of how do we institute that as an ongoing process. Mm. We've also talked about how do we create, whether it's an ombudsman or a support position that is proactively reaching out, so not waiting for youth to actually determine or speak about something that's happened and waiting for a reactive process, but how do we as a department be more proactive? And I just say that that's really, I think Philadelphia has been trying to figure out how do we address the issues and the needs of our own kids. There are definitely some ideas, I think, that could improve the state's oversight that licensed the facility.
Well, let me go to you, Maura, and your investigation, Safe and Uneducated. I mean, children are supposed to be educated in this Commonwealth.
Oh, absolutely. What we see is an utter lack of accountability on at the state level, both by DHS and by the Pennsylvania Department of Education. So this is a non-public school at Glen Mills. There's very, very little accountability by the State Department of Education. Essentially, what they've given to Glen Mills is a license or a certificate to run a school. They have to vow that they will provide 990 hours of education or instruction and that they will comply with providing specific subject matter. That's it. They're not visiting the site. They're not looking at the education that's provided to children, which is predominantly a one-size-fits-all cyber-based credit recovery program. And so, like other residential facilities, on-ground schools at Glen Mills lack certified teachers. They don't perhaps have enough hours of instruction, but because they're not being monitored and there's no oversight, no one knows what's really going on in these classrooms. Are there even educators that are with the students that are providing live instruction? What is going on? What we do know is that the Department of Education monitors places like Glen Mills once every 6 years, and with regard to the children with disabilities, not with regard to the other students.
Let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Maura McInerney, Legal Director of the Education Law Center, Cynthia Figueroa, Philadelphia Department of Human Services Commissioner, and Lisa Gartner, Investigative Reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, talking about Glen Mills schools. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowing. We've been talking about allegations of violence and cover-up at Glen Mills Schools. It's a privately run nonprofit residential facility for male juvenile delinquents in Delaware County, just outside of Philadelphia. And I want to play a couple of clips. The first and the third clip are from an affidavit taken from students at the Glen Mills School. And the second one is an excerpt of a letter written by a Glen Mills student slipped under the door of Randy Ierson, former Glen Mills director. All of three are read by Xavier Lopez.
A staff member grabbed him to physically restrain him, but four guys went into the office and closed the door. We heard noises and him screaming. He was there like 10 minutes. When he came out, he had blood coming out of his nose and he got a carpet burn on his arm. The scar is still there. The staff threw away his bloody white shirt. I want to tell my parents and probation officer how Glen Mills is really like. I'd be scared to fall asleep because I think I'm going to get choked to death in my sleep. He grabbed my shirt. My shirt ripped, and the collar was almost off the shirt. I told my parents, and my father took a picture of my neck. My jaw hurts, and it is making a cracking noise on the right side every time I chew.
And again, those are some of the voices from students at Glen Mills Schools, and read by Xavier Lopez, who's an intern for the Y here at WHYY. Let me read a part of a statement from Glen Mills Schools. Violence is against our mission, against our values, as it has been for nearly two centuries. We take recent allegations very seriously. We will continue to provide access to information requested by state and local officials, as well as Glen Mills Schools families, customers, and our independent review panel experts. And they go on from there. Lisa, let me turn back to you. What has Glen Mills done in response to your reporting?
They formed a review panel of former students, staff members, and child protection experts. They have denied allegations of wrongdoing, but have also said that they will investigate themselves, which is something that lawmakers weren't satisfied with. And despite the formation of the review panel, many jurisdictions throughout the country have decided to pull more than 100 boys out of the school. I've asked for a recent enrollment count at Glen Mills because I believe it's more than that have been removed. But almost 2 weeks now, I believe, they have declined to tell me their enrollment.
Maura, you describe, and it's included in Lisa's reporting, about punching students, broken bones. We heard from some of the students there being choked. Should Glen Mills be closed?
Yes. We have actually, as the Education Law Center, we have called for DHS at the state level to revoke its license. We believe that they are placing children in jeopardy and that the only way to ensure the safety of children is to revoke that license and to end the transfer of children into that placement.
You don't think it can be reformed? Or, I mean, there are investigations and obviously people are looking into what has happened there.
We understand that additional information is necessary, and we applaud the investigations that are taking place, particularly by the Auditor General, and that Governor Wolf has called for these investigations. But we do believe that there is evidence of horrific abuse there, long-term abuse, systemic issues, and a lack of responsibility that has been recognized by Glen Mills. And the pattern that is actually reflected in Lisa's article is what you see in the actual violations and corrective action, which is particularly reflective of the statement that you just provided, which is, we're doing everything, we're against abuse, we have a 40-year history, this is just an anomaly.
And I should say to our listeners that both Lisa and also Cynthia described that after this article came out, and Cynthia, I believe after even your office began to pull students from Glen Mills, you heard from others. I mean, this seems to have opened a floodgate of students and maybe even counselors saying this has been a problem at Glen Mills for a long time.
Yes, and I, you know, I think that, like I said before, I think that the thing that we're really grappling with is, how do you create an environment where folks aren't waiting for a horrible incident occur to come forward and share the tremendous challenges. I am grateful for the work that was done by the Enquirer and the because there were challenges that we saw in the process, and there were concerns that we had with leadership. And, you know, I think of some of the things that have been said, it felt like that, you know, words are just words, and some of the action has been a little too late. I mean, early in the summer, we were calling on some of the action that the organization is now taking. Particularly in terms of what Maura shared in terms of revocation, we would like to see some action taken as it relates to the license, and are concerned that there hasn't been clarity from us as a jurisdiction in terms of, and I believe there are actually still youth there. I do think, the future as it holds, who knows what it will be. We are certainly not going to have children there in any foreseeable future.
Let me just open up the lines and also tell folks how they can join our conversation here. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Chances are you read this investigative story in the Philadelphia Inquirer looking at Glen Mills Schools, and again, the oldest quote-unquote reform school in the country. I know that's probably not the correct language. What is the correct language?
Oh, no, that's the former. I did want to say that I don't know if we'll get to thinking about the future, because I think Glen Mills is one facility. And I think Mara's report, as well as another report that was done by the Juvenile Law Center called Broken Bridges, really highlights that there's a number of challenges with our residential providers. And we don't have a CONEED mechanism. And one of our challenges from a local jurisdiction is what happens when an incident occurs in a facility that doesn't involve Philadelphia youth. And this is a conversation we've been having with the state, and they're looking to make improvements around that. But besides notification, the timely notification, is history, right? So the historic content of Glen Mills, and how can a county administrator have easy access that is going to give them an opportunity to really see sort of all the level of details in order to be most informed of who they contract with.
Let me go back to you, Lisa, and talking about some of the physical abuse that happened with some of the students there. There are ways of, I guess, dealing with children, and we should say these are children who have been adjudicated, so one would assume there probably have been some behavior problems that had to be dealt with. And there are these kind of restraint techniques that are appropriate and sanctioned, but it sounds like at Glen Mills it just went way too far.
Right. According to Chapter 3800 of the state that governs these residential facilities, there are approved restraint techniques, but they're only to be used when a child is in imminent danger to himself or others. And those restraint techniques are very minimal. You know, the first one is a touch on the shoulder. The full restraint is, you know, holding the arm still so that a child isn't, you know, beating you. But what I saw in my reporting was teenage boys, young boys being, you know, just really beaten up to the point where they had broken jaws, broken elbows, broken arms from very small things. They were being punished for bad behavior, which is against the state code, with physical abuse.
There was a student, JR, who ran away. What happened to him?
Yeah, that was a teenage boy from Los Angeles. He was homesick. He was very far from home. And yeah, he had committed crimes, you know, but he was, yeah. So he ran away. They found him. They brought him back. No imminent danger, right? Took him to a stairwell. This is what he told me. And took turns holding him down, beating him and punching him and putting their arms around his neck. And I want to say,
choking him.
Right. And as a reporter, I am careful not to color the interviews I do. So, for instance, when I spoke to JR, I remember that when I got him on the phone, I said, "Hi, I saw that you were a student at Glen Mills. I'd like to talk to you about your experience." And I started saying, you know, "I know that a lot of good happens at the school and people get positive outcomes." And he cut me off and said, "You know, that's not true. Or if that's true, it's also happening with, you know, getting beat up. It's a terrible place and I'm haunted by it." So I couldn't even get through, you know, the positives.
Let me go back to something else at Glen Mills. Send us. Glen Mills Schools works with challenged youth from across the country, many of whom we are proud to say have gone on to become stand-up fathers and members of their communities after attending Glen Mills Schools. And you wouldn't disagree with that, would you?
I think any juvenile who was able to turn his life around, go to college, you know, get a job, should be very proud of himself. And I would say that, you know, positives can happen and should happen. But it's not newsworthy if a facility does its job that it's paid to do. You're supposed to help these children. You're supposed to turn their lives around. And you need to be able to accomplish that without physically abusing children as well.
Well, I would think, Maura, is it really requires a kind of specialized training to deal with youth who have had some problems. And our system, you know, believes that children are rehabilitatable.
Absolutely.
And that there are certain skills and techniques and even education that can help a child under these circumstances.
Absolutely. And remember that the purpose of the Juvenile Act is rehabilitative. It is not punitive. So the focus should be on rehabilitation. We also have to recognize that the vast majority of students at Glen Mills, like other residential placements, are actually students with disabilities, and there are different rules that apply with regard to restraints, which in many cases do result, by the way, in physical injury when you use restraints. When it comes to children with disabilities,
Like physical disabilities or emotional?
This is a child who needs special education services. So in that context, restraints are a last resort, and there are very specific rules around how you use restraints, what occasions you can use them, and again, never punitive, always the last resort. And there are different types, for example, restraining a child against the floor, which is absolutely prohibited. And it's only allowed when a parent has consented to it through a positive behavior support plan.
Counselors are supposed to receive very specific trainings, too.
Correct.
And yearly found, trainings, right?
Yes.
And we found that at Glen Mills, the trainings was, you know, in my reporting, very bare bones, open book, 15-question quiz that you couldn't fail.
And lack of training was consistently something that the Pennsylvania Department of Human Resources found when it did its investigations of violations. And consistently it said you have to train your staff. Consistently they agreed to do so.
And there's so many pieces of the story, but the state police got involved in, I believe, around the year 2000.
Yes.
And what they observed was pretty shocking to the state police. And yet here we are, 2019. And Glen Mills, they don't have the 1,000 students that they used to have, but there are still students there. Do you think, Cynthia Figueroa, I know they're not from Philadelphia, are those students safe?
So that's not for me to say for the other jurisdictions. I mean, we certainly took a position in Philadelphia that we believe that they would be best served not at Glen Mills. And so I think without having the assurance that you have some physical presence on site, I would certainly, you know, it would be a point of concern for me if I was the administrator of a different city. And you know, I think it, like just even thinking about the story that was shared about the young man in the staircase from Los Angeles, not only would that not be known to, you know, so there's an issue when we have sites that have not just kids from across the Commonwealth, but kids from like across the country. In that particular case, there would have been a responsibility for them to notify that jurisdiction, but and there would have been a report hopefully called in, assuming that it people would have. It doesn't sound like it occurred, and I don't know the details. The question is, would that ever come back to the Commonwealth in terms of knowledge for the jurisdictions to know that something happened to a child from another state? So that's another, I think, in terms of forward thinking, because again, like I said, I think that there is a lot to be learned from our experience, both historic and more current, as it relates to Glen Mills.
Well, were laws broken at the school? You're from the Education Law Center. If we're talking all the things that we have been talking at, are they against the law?
We are still obtaining information, and investigations are ongoing. But certainly, if the use of restraints in the way that it's been characterized, the education that the children have received is obviously an issue that we're learning more about as the children are actually leaving Glen Mills, about the type of education that they have received. So we certainly have concerns that laws may have been broken.
Let me read the rest of what we heard from or what we got from Glen Mills schools, and then we got a bunch of folks that want to join our conversation. They say, we see thousands of visitors every year from parents and families to judges, lawyers, and child welfare professionals. The school is regulated and licensed each year by the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, which approved full licensure in 2018. I will get to that. Let me get some callers. And is it Zach? Is that who we have? Zach, go ahead, Zach. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I've just been listening to the guests on the radio here, and I wanted to talk about my experience and my wife's experience as foster parents. And I can certainly agree with what the guests have said, but for us, our overarching experience was that DHS and the other child welfare agencies in Philadelphia, there is a profound lack of transparency. Mm. And these agencies aren't designed to work for us, foster parents. They're not designed to really work for biological parents. They're barely designed to work for children. They're designed to fulfill the basic minimum requirements of the law. And so the agenda becomes, how do I move this case off of my workload? How do I get this off the book? And that doesn't end up meaning that children have the best well-being in their outcomes.
Well, Zach,
thanks, Marty.
Yeah, no, thanks for calling in. I mean, that's not necessarily related to Glenn Mills, but let me toss that to you, Cynthia Figueroa.
Sure, no, I appreciate that. And one of the things that we've been doing through this administration is recognizing that that has been a historic critique of the department and all child welfare serving systems. And so one of the things that we've been doing is actually trying to be incredibly transparent. So one of the things that we did in this administration was create actually a public-facing scorecard that talked about sort of the performance of the providers who do that specific work, and also our work specifically with foster care providers that are working with families. And having public data, we put our data on our website, we present publicly, we try to do town halls at the level by which, you know, Zach, who called in, is on individual cases, mm-hmm. the level of transparency that what might be talking about. I mean, I don't know the specifics of that particular case, but I will say that we constantly struggle with the dynamics, right? You have bio parents, you have foster parents who might be pre-adoptive, you have systems. It is a highly complicated system, and we have a lot to do to improve that. So unlike some of what we're talking about today, as we refer back to Glenn Mills,
sure.
We're very much committed to improving the quality and not trying to hide behind the problems that we've had.
We're almost up on a break here, but talking about transparency, I mean, is there enough transparency so that, I mean, there's privacy, but there's also the need for transparency?
There's absolutely a need for greater transparency at all levels. Courts need to know what's going on in these facilities. They need to know where they are placing children. There certainly needs to be more transparency with regard to the providers themselves, not only Glenn Mills, but all residential placements, more monitoring, more information available through the state agencies that license them and should provide significant oversight. So that information needs to be at all levels. There needs to be checks and balances at all levels, including county children and youth agencies, as well as advocates and attorneys in court.
That's Maura McInerney, legal director of the Education Law Center. Also with us, Cynthia Figueroa. She's commissioner of Philadelphia's Department of Human Services. And Lisa Gartner. She's investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, whose article on abuse at Glenn Mills schools has prompted investigations and lots of questions about both Glenn Mills, but what happens to children like this. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. We are talking about Glenn Mills Schools just outside of Philadelphia. For many years considered one of the most prestigious, quote-unquote, reform schools in the country, is now under investigation for allegations of widespread abuse spanning decades and also cover-up as well. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Mike to join us, and Mike is calling us from Villanova. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. I love your show, and thank you for your guest.
Sure.
I am a criminal defense attorney that spent about 10 years in the district attorney's office in Philadelphia, and I want to give you just, if you just indulge me for 30 seconds, let's take a real life, every single solitary day experience for these young men that go to Glenn Mills. You're using the word children. I will tell you that my experience in dealing with kids in the juvenile justice system is once they have to get placed, that is because throughout their system, maybe they were smoking marijuana, not going to school, whatever it was, there was an adjustment made in front of a judge, probation officer, you know, got involved, and, you know, hopefully the kid did well. The kids that go there, some of them are homeless, some of them are drug addicts, some of them have very deep-seated mental health and psychiatric illnesses, and I will tell you that the people that I talk to, it is not their parents, because most of those kids come from broken homes. It's a grandmother. It's 80 years old, and they're trying to change the behavior of a 15-year-old.
And Mike, hold on. Just, you said 30 seconds. You've gone more than 30 seconds. What is your point?
What I'm trying to say is my experience is that Glenn Mills, to every single solitary client that I suggested that they go there, has thanked me once they got out of there. Is it perfect? No. But what's the alternative?
Okay, fair enough. We will take your point. And, I mean, I think it should be said, and I think we have said this during the hour, that there are students there who have done very well and gone on to lead productive lives. But what you found, Lisa, is a culture of intimidation and violence.
I'm just stuck on him saying, is it perfect? No. Child abuse is against the law. I mean, regardless, he can be of the opinion that a child who has committed a crime, you know, deserves rough treatment. But legally, that's not true.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And I will say, I would push back against the notion that they're all from broken homes. I spoke to many concerned parents who were trying to visit their children and sometimes succeeding weekly or monthly. And it's important to them to have their kids close to home. So Glenn Mills, they wanted that to be a good option because they were able to go see their kids.
In fact, that's how your story began, with a mom visiting her son.
Right, right. And she did that frequently. And I would say I spoke to teenagers who did a range of things, whether it was violating probation. I just spoke to someone who had a drug charge. And yes, there are some who got caught up in gang activity, had a gun or a knife. Does any juvenile, does any person deserve to be beaten? No.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Maura, and then to you, Cynthia. Go ahead,
Maura. We disproportionately place children in residential placements in Pennsylvania. In 2017, 47% of children 14 to 21 were in residential. We utilize it for kids who may be just truant from school, and we think they'll just roll over and go to school there. So it is overused as a placement. There are other models in New York and elsewhere, other jurisdictions, where the research says you're better off staying in your community, getting the resources that you need there, staying in the same school so that your education is not disrupted. All of that goes to reducing utilizing these kinds of residential placements at all.
Cynthia, I know you want to add to that. And I also want to know, so if you are no longer sending students to Glenn Mills and have pulled everyone mm-hmm. out, where are you sending them? And are they getting the services that they need?
So I think on the earlier part, just following up on what Maura shared, is that Philadelphia has made a huge commitment to greatly reduce its congregate care meeting residential placement. So not just on the juvenile justice side, but also on the dependency side. And we've dramatically reduced, even in the last several years. I think our count was in like the 360s, which is the lowest. It was in the 2500s, like eight years ago. So even in the last 2 years, we've reduced it dramatically. And so the commitment of being close to home right. is really important to us. So in the more recent tenure of this administration, we've closed, in my administration, we've closed four facilities where that Philadelphia County is no longer using. Only of those four, one of the licenses was revoked by the state. So we were able to act in a swift fashion. On the dependency side, we're also looking, we're well below the national average. So the Commonwealth is looking at this issue, but I think Philadelphia is helping lead the way, but we're 100% committed. I mean, what I was going to say is my resolve in the wake of this and other incidents that have happened is we need our kids in the community, but we need then more foster parents, and we need foster parents who are willing to take difficult and older youth if we intend to try to keep kids in the community.
And juvenile justice is about rehabilitation. It's not about punishment
Correct.
Necessarily. The idea that children, no matter what they have done, have a chance to turn their lives around, and we want to support them in doing that.
I think that concept of residential placement is getting very archaic in terms of a treatment methodology for juvenile justice.
Fair enough. Let me read a comment from Paul, and then we'll get Josh to join us. Paul says, Glenn Mills is saying this is an isolated incident, but I interviewed for a job there in the 1970s. They told me then to use a stick to make sure kids got to class on time. Then he says, I did not take the job. Let me get Josh from Allentown to join our conversation. Josh, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I appreciate the program, and I love the attention that y'all place on getting the verbiage correct and using the correct language. I wanted to address my comment to early in the program when there was a distinction made, I think, in the newspaper between social workers and the bodybuilder staff that are employed at Glenn Mills. I appreciate the distinction, but I also think that it ought to be applied to the title that those staff are given. I'm a master's level counselor, and liberally applying the term counselor to anyone who talks to another person during the course of their work, I think does a disservice to the profession, which is, you know, a cadre of highly educated people governed by a body, the American Counseling Association, which has ethical standards and guidelines. And when the term counselor is kind of sure. thrown around, refer to direct care staff, it really does a disservice to the profession. And I think perpetrates the facade that they were talking about earlier, where there's no transparency, where parents or caregivers believe their child is receiving mental health care or rehabilitative treatment, and that they're told they're going to be meeting with a counselor.
Sure.
This sort of, it just, I think, perpetrates that lack of transparency that is endemic in the system.
Josh, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Lisa Gardner a chance to respond to your comments, this notion of counselors who really don't have the kind of credentials that Josh is talking about.
That's an interesting point. And as for what Maura said, I mean, the title that you get as a staffer is teacher/counselor. And, you know, if what Maura's saying is that they're not licensed teachers and what the caller's saying that they're not licensed counselors, it is sort of a question mark. I will say that I think he's making a good point in terms of the men I spoke to who are now in their 30s that were at Glen Mills and have had time to digest their experiences there talk about having lasting trust issues, which makes sense when you think about a person who was supposed to be your counselor or teacher, you know, beating you up.
Let me read an email from Sandy who says, growing up as a teen in the mid-50s in Philadelphia, myself and others heard horrific stories of abuse from kids who had been sent to the quote-unquote reform school, Glen Mills. We asked our local policemen and other adults about the truthfulness of these stories. All believed that the quote-unquote bad kids were lying, which I think speaks to our first caller, sort of the idea that somehow if you've gotten in trouble that you are sort of either not to be believed or should be tossed away. Maura, you want to say something?
Yeah, that's what's so horrific about this, right? No one believed these children. No one believed the parents who are also in the dark, right? They go to meet with their children. They're sitting down, and there's someone that's standing right by their child, which was evidenced in the report, in the article, and in our report as well. So that there's a lack of transparency. The role of the parents is that they're not informed about what's really going on, and we really need to think about that transparency with the family. The other thing we haven't really talked about is the fact that while this abuse is going on, there are other children witnessing this abuse and being traumatized as a result of that.
The kind of helplessness that goes with that, and also a kind of message of terror in a way.
It's a traumatic event, and you are told that you will be elevated to a higher social status if you report on another child. You engage in this peer conflict. That is rewarded, and yet if you challenge the intimidation, violence, and abuse that's happening by staff members, you are told you will serve a longer sentence.
That's what was so frightening about the original incident last summer. It happened to be caught on video. It was the only hall at the time in Glen Mills that had video surveillance. And when this 17-year-old from Philadelphia was beaten and choked for several minutes, there were 30 or 40 boys sitting around in the room who didn't blink, didn't stand up, it struck many people who viewed the video as, wow, this is business as usual. This is normal for the children there.
Where is Randy Ireson? He's the former, or but he's Glen Mills director. And where is he? What is he doing? Do we know?
He has taken a leave of absence, citing health reasons. He is continuing to be compensated by the school and live in school-affiliated housing. In the interim, they have not said how long this leave of absence will be. The board of managers resigned, citing business and personal reasons. Christopher Spriggs, the director of, I apologize if I get this wrong, regulatory compliance and student services or special services, who's worked at the school for 25 years, has been made the assistant executive director and is acting executive director.
Let me quote something, Lisa, and I'm putting it to you, Cynthia Figueroa. In Lisa's Gartner's report, one of the articles says, typed on the school letterhead, the message is, quote, I have been told that a hearing will be held this week to consider if I should stay at Glen Mills. I want you to know that if I can go home, I want to, but I have to go. But if I have to go somewhere else, I want to stay at Glen Mills. And she goes on to write, Glen Mills staffers encourage Philadelphia students to sign these pre-typed letters by falsely claiming their sentence would restart if they left Glen Mills for another program. And I want to just give you a chance, Cynthia Figueroa, to respond to that.
Well, we know the claim is inaccurate. So the information that was provided to the young men was completely inaccurate. Now, whether or not There were any boys who wanted to stay. I can't speak to that because I haven't talked to each single one of those boys independently. I think it was really concerning to hear that they were, you know, under duress and not clear about their future. And all of these young folks are represented, so they have attorneys. So my concern, too, is ensuring that their attorneys were aware of these incidents and properly representing those young individuals, as well as the, you know, the involvement in terms of how probation works with them, et cetera. So we were concerned. It was brought to our attention as well. And so we definitely followed up with Glenn Mills at the time.
Lisa, anything you want to add to that?
Glenn Mills said that they did present the letters to Philadelphia students, but merely as an option, and that students could decide for themselves if they wanted to sign it.
Yeah. And so
I think you said merely as an option as a kind of ironic statement there.
Some of the people who weighed in on the story felt like, you know, if your boss or supervisor or teacher came to you and said you could sign a thing saying you wanted to stay, that it's not really an option. Right. But my opinion doesn't really matter. But
it feels like coercion.
Well, that was what the public defender felt.
Yeah, and I think what was most distressing, and I think it's been certainly with the unraveling at the end of our time of utilizing Glenn Mills, is our conversation with them was that there was a request by kids to have letters, right? So nobody's getting straight information. So they gave an answer very different to Lisa than they provided to DHS when we inquired about the letters.
Let me read. Ray says, I'm a social worker, and in Pennsylvania, using restraints is still legal, whereas most other states have outlawed them. You can get as much training as possible, but as long as things like restraints are still legal, there will always be a problem. Maura, you want to respond to that?
I think that that's exactly right, that restraints are permitted to be used under the law. And what we see is that when there's a pattern of using these restraints, it is accompanied by injury. So, for example, in our report, Unsafe and Uneducated, which we co-authored with Children's Rights, we talk about the use of restraints and that in, you know, over a third of the cases, it ended up in significant injury and child maltreatment.
Wow. Anything, Lisa, you want to add to that? And we have about a minute or so before we have to say goodbye. Are you surprised about the reaction to your investigation?
Am I surprised about the reaction?
Well, I mean, the Auditor General is looking in. Philadelphia is pulling students out. Others are as well. It's put the future of Glenn Mills, I think, on the table.
I'm heartened that the people who are in positions to hold Glenn Mills and other schools like them accountable are doing their own investigations and looking into these allegations. And I think that, you know, what I uncovered in my reporting was oftentimes hard to hear. And sure. I think when you read those statements from the students, it's especially compelling. We didn't publish, but I mean, I have photos of some of these injuries. We didn't publish them because we didn't want to identify the students. So for me, it does make me feel glad that some of the students and families and counselors who trusted me to tell their stories are seeing results for the risk that they took.
Well, we could go on. We do have to end on that comment. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us today on Radio Times. Lisa, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
And thanks for your story. Lisa Gartner, investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we have been talking about her story that is in the published just a couple of weeks ago, Beaten and Silenced. Maura McInerney, thanks for your work as well.
Thank you so much.
And she's legal director of the Education Law Center, co-author of a report that came out at the end of 2018, Unsafe and Uneducated, Indifference to Dangers in Pennsylvania's Residential Welfare Facilities. And Cynthia Figueroa, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
As well. And she's commissioner of Philadelphia's Department of Human Services. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen, with Susan Greenbaum as well. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.